Welcome to The Grill Room. On the menu this week, all the latest news, views, and opinions from the world of professional golf. Your maitre d's are Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli, two friends who rarely agree on anything. You can count on them to give you both sides of the story, whether you want it or not. So come on in, have a seat, and remember, anything that comes from the grill room is definitely on our tab. Remember, keep your applause to a mild clap, all right? After all, we're talking golf here.
Aloha, mahalo. After 2 weeks in the land of aloha, it's time to get back to the mainland and unfortunately reality. Hi, I'm Bob Bubka, here with Alex Maselli. And Alex, the Sony Open turned out to be quite an exciting finish.
Yeah, you know, it did, Bob. On Saturday night, we had Kisner and Blair and Snedeker. And to be quite honest with you, considering how they were playing and everything they had going on, I really didn't think much about anybody else outside of that final threesome. And then, you know, you started seeing a little scoring going on. I mean, there was a point there, I remember being in the media center, there was a point where five guys were tied for the lead at 15-under, and one of them was Webb Simpson, who I remember were sitting there like, well, where did he come from? So there was a lot of jostling going on, and then Fabian Gomez just obviously played terrific. It was a huge thing, seven birdies in a row, and not only were we thinking that he's got a chance to maybe do something spectacular, but really at seven birdies in a row on a par 70 golf course, you're thinking 59. I mean, he had a lot of time left. He had some holes left that were birdieable. He certainly had, well, they're all birdieable, but I mean, a better chance of birdie. He's got the 18th, which is clearly a birdie hole, even though what was odd is Gomez hadn't birdied the hole at all during the week. So you got all these holes coming up where he's got a chance, and, you know, so it was pretty bizarre. And then the playoff, where I think that Fabian Gomez certainly outplayed Brant Snedeker in the end.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And kind of seems ironic, you know, when you brace for the Hawaiian swing, you brace for the sheer beauty of going to the Hawaiian Islands, but you also put in your backpack the knowledge that it's going to be windy. And it seems like, you know, obviously there was no wind when we were up at Kapalua, and certainly very little wind, if any, at Wailea.
Well, I mean, you're right. I mean, I think we had a little wind at times at Kapalua, but nothing crazy, nothing like, you know, the golf course was designed for. And at Wailea, it's the same thing. And even when we had a little breeze maybe on Saturday during the third round, it didn't change anything. These guys, you know, when you're hitting driver 9-iron, driver wedge into a par 5, which is what they were doing into 9, which I think had over, there was over 40-something eagles on the ninth hole this week at Sony. I mean, you're just eating that course up. And there are places where you can get yourself in trouble. And I alluded to the fact that I thought Fabian Gomez did a much better job in the playoff. The first two playoff holes were actually the par 5 18th. And I was talking to a caddy in the airport before I flew back to the mainland on Sunday night, and we were talking about his player and what his player is doing. And he was telling his player, do not hit driver on 18. And, you know, what was funny is that Brant Snedeker hit driver on 18. He tried to take it over the palm trees off the tee and hit this big banana ball into the middle of the bunker. And Fabian Gomez, who's up next, just hits a hybrid right in the middle of the fairway. He hits a iron onto the front end of the green and two putts for the win. And it's like, Brant Snedeker, you're expecting him to play the hole a little better, a little smarter. And it was really Fabian Gomez who played the hole so smartly, and partly, I'm sure, because of the fact that he knew where Brant Snedeker was off the tee. But still, all in all, it's just not a hole this week that you want to hit driver off the tee.
You know, there's always a little bit of affection that I have for the Wailea Country Club, and there's a connection to one of your favorite golf courses in the whole wide world, and that being the National Golf Links of America on Long Island. Blair McDonald, the designer of that golf course, had a partner by the name of Seth Rayner, who designed the Southampton Golf Club, which is adjacent to National Golf Links of America, and he was the designer of Wailea Country Club. So a little of Long Island all the way out there in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. By the way, you mentioned Snedeker, and by his standards, he certainly seemed to have trouble on the greens.
You know, I was playing good. I did a great job of staying patient, giving myself opportunities, and I just couldn't make anything today. You know, I really struggled all week on the greens, and these guys are playing so good, and guys were making a lot of putts, and I wasn't able to do it, and that's frustrating for me because it's normally the strength of my game, but you just got to find a way to get it done, and I didn't.
Well, you know better than anybody, Alex. Brent has been working with Butch Harmon, obviously, on revamping his swing. I want your comments on that, but let's hear what Mr. Snedeker has to say on his swing changes.
No, I mean, I'm hitting the ball fantastic, you know. So, I mean, that's exciting. You know, it's going to be a great year. I'm playing the way I've always wanted to play, the way I feel like I should play. But, you know, it's never fun when you get these situations and not pulling it out. Nobody blame but myself. Just need to figure out a way to make those putts.
Well, you know, it's interesting how you got Nick Watney going back, now back to Butch. You got Brant Snedeker working with Butch. You got Dustin Johnson working with Butch. There's so many good players that either have worked or worked with Butch. And in talking to Brant about it, it's the swing changes are important, and they're minute. They're not big, huge revamping of his swing. Same thing when you talk to Jimmy Walker, a little kind of head move that he's doing now that he wasn't doing before. But I think the other benefit that these guys have working with Butch Harmon is the longevity and history and the knowledge he has in the game. It's really not only a physical connection, but it's an emotional connection with these guys. Their ability to listen to him and to talk with him and to really get a good feel about themselves and about what they're doing. Brant has always talked about the fact that, you know, Butch is always pumping you up. He's telling you positive things. He's not telling you negative things. And if you're a caddy on the PGA Tour, you know that when you're talking to your player about a shot, you're never telling him about things he shouldn't do. You're always pointing him in the directions and things he should do. And, you know, nobody wants to hear the negative out there. And I think that's one of the big positives that Butch Harmon brings to all of his players, and especially in talking to Brant Snedeker.
Well, it's kind of interesting you bring that up a little later in the show. We're going to talk about the value of a caddy, and I think a lot of our listeners might be surprised. You know, it seems very glamorous. You just seem to carry the bag and whatever. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. But one situation did arise at the Sony Open, Alex, and I think you alluded to it last year, and that was the anchoring or non-anchoring. It already became an issue. It appeared that Zach Blair, the end of his club, touched his shirt. The rules official called him in. There was a discussion. There's no penalty. But is this something we better get used to for the rest of the year?
Well, I think so. And what was interesting, Bob, is so this happened on the 17th hole, and it didn't happen with a putter. It happened with a utility wood that he was using to chip with. And so the rules official came into the trailer on 18 after the round was over. Blair had just missed the playoff by a shot. And so they're in there, not only Blair, but the rules official and Brant Snedeker and Kevin Kistner, who he had played with that day. And Blair had no knowledge of anything. He was unaware of anything. I talked to Andy Martinez while this was going on inside the trailer. And I mentioned to Andy, did you have any knowledge of this potential issue on 17? And he goes, I don't even know what you're talking about, which is the exact same reaction Blair had inside the trailer to when the rules official came to him and asked him the same thing. Now, what you have to remember is that this rule is really predicated upon the fact that you have to have intended to anchor a particular club. And if Blair didn't know what he was talking about, it's pretty clear that he couldn't have anchored it or didn't know he was anchoring or making a violation of the rule. So that pretty much took care of it. The discussion between the rules official and Zach Blair was probably not more than 30 seconds. And in talking to the rules official afterwards, I also asked him if he talked to the other players that are involved, and he said yes, and neither player had any knowledge of any issue going on out there. The way that was what was interesting to me, though, Bob, is how this came about. And I guess the PGA Tour has people watching the television broadcast. And that's how it came about. They saw it on television. They went ahead and walkie-talkied back out to the rules official, who then caught Blair after his round. So it's kind of interesting. I think that I think it's very difficult, if you look at the videotape, as I would say, to determine if there's any particular potential issue. I mean, I guess you could determine there's a potential issue, but was there really an issue? And again, when you get back to the intent part of the equation, it doesn't really matter.
Well, the eye in the sky is starting to sound like the NFL, where they now have rules officials in the replay booth that are watching almost everything that's happening on the field, and they make their call. Alex, you may mention the name Andy Martinez, longtime caddy for Tom Lehman. Is he on the bag permanently now for Zach Blair, or is this a one and out?
No, this happened sometime last year that Andy made the switch back to the PGA Tour and back to Zach Blair's bag. And obviously, I think you'll see that Blair has played pretty well with Andy on the bag. And this is just an extension of how that relationship is working out. Zach Blair, a very confident player. But I think, you know, in talking to him about Andy, he just said, look, here's a guy that's been everywhere. He's been there, all these venues. He's played, he's won on a lot of these venues. He knows a lot about these venues. And so I think when you get a place like Wailea, where, you know, it is kind of quirky, it is different. It's not just a bomber's golf course. I think that the benefit of having Andy Martinez in the bag is worth certainly a couple shots this week and probably make the difference between Zach Blair getting in the mix and not.
Well, certainly he has established himself. Mr. Martinez is one of the best guys ever to carry a bag, not only on the golf course but off the golf course. Let's move on. Some non-activity, I assume, off the golf course involving Robert Allenby. What was your reaction going back to Sony, the site of the infamous incident a year ago? Seemed like everything a no story this year.
Well, I mean, it was a no story. I thought, you know, I have to give a little props to Robert Allenby for just saying, I'd like to talk about this. And we spent about 15 minutes after his practice round on Tuesday talking about what had happened the year before and the aftermath of it and how it has affected him. And it's affected him greatly. It's clear. Not the fact that what happened affected him. It was all the media aftermath that really has affected him the most. And he's very, very bitter still towards the Golf Channel and their coverage of the event. And he said, look, you know, I've been consistent in what I've said, and he has been consistent in what he said. He always indicated that he had very little knowledge, direct knowledge of what had happened, and that he relied on other people telling him what happened, and that is what he relayed or told the police and told the media. So, you know, the criticism that he received from other media sources was probably very well unfounded, but, you know, that's just that's the world we live in. I know a little over a week ago, when you were talking to Jordan Spieth and he talked about the difficulties of social media, well, that's certainly part of what happened to Robert Allenby. And it was so difficult, Bob, to a point where he had to seek out a psychiatrist to help him through the issues. And I would say that Robert Allenby is still struggling to some extent with some of these issues, not as great as he was before, but he is still struggling with these issues to some extent, and it's going to affect him still on the golf course to some, you know, maybe a small percentage, but he's working through it, and he feels very good about his game and the health part of his game and the swing part of his game. It is dealing with the mental aspects of the game that he's still struggling with, and, you know, he did take his top 50 exemption this year, so if he doesn't keep his card, he's basically on his own. He has no other exemptions to use, so it is important for Robert Allenby to try to get off to a good start. Unfortunately, this week he didn't make the cut at Sony, but I think, and it started with a triple bogey on the first hole, which the first hole is hard, but making a triple is pretty hard your first day. And then I think the cut was at 3 under. So you're already 6 shots off the cut before you even get to the second hole. It makes it pretty difficult for Robert Allenby.
Well, we can only hope that he does bounce back and have a good year. Robert Allenby does so much for charity that that he doesn't even seek any publicity concerning it. And a Grill Room salute to Robert Allenby. And I hope that he gets back in that winner's circle. Somebody, if they get in the winner's circle, we may not recognize who they are. What's going on with Boo Weekly and that beard that he was sporting? Let me ask you, are there any PGA Tour rules, Alex, that dictate how long your beard can be, or is it strictly up to the player?
You know, I mean, if you're talking facial hair, I actually talked to the tour about this, and they said that there is no specific rule about facial hair, but yet there is a, you know, an over-encompassing, I guess what we say, grooming rule. I mean, you can't just show up out there with, you know, tattered pants and so forth and so on, and I think this extends to the beard. Boo Weekly beard is, to some people, quite interesting, and to some people, not very interesting. And it clearly is not a, you know, it's not the same beard that you'd find on, I don't even know who I can think of. It's not a greatly kept beard, I think is what I would say. That being said, it's certainly appropriate to who Boo Weekly is. It wouldn't fit for you or me, but for who Boo Weekly is, a, you know, kind of a mountain guy, a hunter, a fisherman, you know, just one of those guys that, you know, he's just going to let it grow, and he's not going to sit there and mess with it. It's what was that movie with Tom Hanks where he was on an island, desert island, for forever? You know, it's one of those kind of beards, and, you know, I mean, that's just who Boo is. And the tour, it's unclear exactly how much the tour has taken exception to it. There was a discussion between a rules official and Weekly. Weekly thinks that that discussion was the beginnings of them suggesting that maybe he needs to trim his beard or do something with his beard. But what was interesting is what Weekly believes is that if they come after him for his beard, the reason they're going to use the way they're going to get out after him for the beard is more because of his comments of what he said at Sanderson Farms about the wraparound season and Tim Fincham, and how this tour is no longer a player's tour but a Tim Fincham tour. Boo really believes that the beard is the way they're getting to him for those comments he made back last or late last year. And so he's unsure of what's going to happen. He said if they did come to him and suggest that he needed to trim his beard, that he would look into trimming his beard, but I don't think the beard is going away for a while.
Well, maybe he's auditioning for Duck Dynasty. Who knows, especially with Boo Weekly. Well, the Grill Room had a new hotel partner for the Sony Open this year. Alex, your thoughts?
Well, you know, Bob, the Holiday Inn Resort Waikiki Beachcomber was the official hotel partner of the Grill Room Golf Show during the Sony Open. And I have to tell you, Bob, it was tremendous. It was a great experience. It was in a great location. I really enjoyed it. The rooms were nice. The views, I mean, I don't know what you could say. I mean, I've been going to Sony for a long time. I've stayed a lot of different places, and I really enjoyed my time there. I didn't have to have my car ever. I just come out, and I'm right in the middle of Waikiki. I mean, I don't know how else you can beat that. And like I said, the rooms were great. The people were really nice. I would sit out on my balcony at night and work on my computer, and I'd be sitting out there and, you know, seeing the sights of Honolulu. So, you know, look, if I'm not one for, you know, getting so excited about a place, but, you know, we travel a lot, and when you can go to a place where you're very comfortable and you enjoy your time there, I just have nothing but great things to say about the Holiday Inn Resort Waikiki Beachcomber.
Yeah, you had a great look at Diamond Head, Waikiki Beach, as you mentioned, and, of course, the ocean, all with complimentary wireless access. So if you're going to Honolulu for business or vacation, take it from Alex Maselli. Stay at the Holiday Inn Resort Waikiki Beachcomber and feel the spirit of Aloha. You can call them at 877-577-5756 or visit them on the web at WaikikiBeachcomberResort.com.
The Grill Room is proud to be doing our part to entertain the active men and women in our military as well as our veterans as part of the Armed Forces Radio Network.
What about anchoring, Alex? Several ex-players were in the Sony Open field. Let's talk about that after this short break. You're listening to The Grill Room, powered by GolfWeek.com, heard on TuneIn Radio and the Armed Forces Radio Network.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
I'd like to welcome some of the most important people in golf to The Grill Room. Golf course superintendents. Golf course superintendents are the unsung heroes of our great game. Due to the game's efforts, we now have turf that needs less water, courses that are more sustainable, with many that now offer natural wildlife habitats. From the days of old Tom Morris, golf course superintendents have given golfers a reason to love this great game. But don't take my word for it. The 2015 Masters champion, the U.S. Open champion, and the FedEx Cup champion, Jordan Spieth, agrees.
If you love golf like I do, you'll thank your golf course superintendent.
A message from the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and local superintendents everywhere.
Sight is one of our most valued senses. Many cherished memories and important life lessons are acquired through sight. Through the Transitions Healthy Sight for Life Fund, we're reaching out in communities around the world to help people understand and protect their healthy sight. Think about what you'd miss seeing if you lost your eyesight tomorrow, and take steps to protect your vision today. See more at healthysightforlife.org.
Welcome back to The Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli.
I'm Bob. He's Alex. Well, some players had to make the move, Alex, January 1st, banning, anchoring of the putter. Any skinny from the Sony Open on the players that have been affected?
Well, Bob, stop for a second. She's got a whole reset in here. Did you see this? Well, you know, Bob, you know, you got Carl Peterson, you got Tim Clark. Those are the two of the guys that are specific. Adam Scott had kind of made the change. So did Webb Simpson. So you said you saw Webb Simpson on near the top of the board or at top of the board at one point. So obviously he's kind of figured that out. And talking to Carl Peterson, I think it was clear that he was having some issues. He had tried this. I'm going to call it an inverted head putter that Tim Clark is using. By the way, Tim Clark did make the cut and played pretty well. But he was trying to use this inverted head putter that Tim Clark had been using. And by practicing with it, he actually started to strain some ligaments in his wrist, in his left wrist. And so he had to stop using that putter. And he made a switch to a putter he hadn't even used at home. I think it was the day before, so it had to be Wednesday, the Wednesday of the Sony Open. So he went ahead and got an Odyssey putter, a Versa Odyssey putter, and he used that on Thursday and Friday. So what was interesting is when he came off the golf course on Thursday, first round, we're standing there, he started off on 10, so he finished on 9. He comes off the par 5 after making birdie, and he walks by us, even before he's even scoring, he looks up, he goes, "Boy," he goes, I didn't think I was going to putt that well. I was surprised that that was not the problem. And then we talked later, and he said, "Look, you know, I putted very well this on my first round. That was not my issue. My issue was my ball striking and where the ball was going. I was very surprised how well I putted, considering, A, that I had to make this putter change that I didn't want to make, and, B, that I made it to a change to a putter that I hadn't even used before until yesterday." So, you know, every one of the players that I talked to were – relatively comfortable with making the change, but in Peterson's case, or I should say Carl Peterson's case, in his case, it did affect him mentally, and he thinks that maybe all he was thinking about of coming out and having to putt with this putter for the first time since he was a professional, that it took away from his focus on his driving and his iron play and the rest of his game. And so it's one of the things that he was trying to deal with. Unfortunately, he didn't make the cut, but he started getting better and better as the round went on Thursday, and I think he's going to be fine. He's playing this week at Career Builders, and I think you'll find that maybe you'll see Carl Pedersen's name making the cut and playing on Sunday in Palm Springs.
Well, we certainly hope so. Look at this on the international side, Alex. 21-year-old South African Hayden Porteous. He wins the Joburg Open. Fourth first-time winner on the European Tour this season in the last four events. So the youth movement not only prevailing here on the PGA Tour, it's certainly becoming a huge factor on the European Tour.
Well, it is. And, I mean, it wasn't only Hayden Porteous, but it was Xander Lombard as well. You know, those are two young guys. The week before, we had another young guy win on the South African Tour. So, look, there's no question that youth is becoming a big part of what's happening in professional golf. And what's interesting, if you talk to the players that are a little older on the tour, and I'm not talking about, you know, guys that are 40 years old, but I'm talking even 35 and 33 and 32-year-old. It's what they're surprised about is the ability for these guys to come out, not just one, but so many of them to just come out and just go. There's no deference at all to anybody else on that on the tour. And it's such a bomb and gouge tour now because these young guys, that's all they really know. There's a person I know in the equipment business that came to me the other day and said, you know, you can't measure eras very easily, and that's very true. We talk about this all the time, the, you know, Jack to Watson to Greg Norman to Tiger Woods to where we are now with Rory and Jason Day and Jordan Spieth. And the one thing that you what's hard with Tiger and these other kids is Tiger always had the opportunity to play with the same clubs from day one, from when he was a kid, basically, to when he was in high school, when he was in college, and then when he was in the pros. He didn't have to make really any real big adjustments. I mean, Metal Woods hardly had come out. He was always playing pretty much with the same stuff. This group you have now has these younger kids. They've always played pretty much with the same stuff. They've never had to make really big jumps or adjustments to equipment, where you take some players that they went from the old era to the new era. That is very hard to make those adjustments. And really, some of them suffered if you take a look at Justin Leonard as an example. But these kids now, they've all played with the same equipment, so they're ready to go. There's no adjustment period at all. They're going, and they're really competing against some of the guys, especially the older guys, that didn't have the ability to play with the same equipment throughout their careers.
Yeah, that's an excellent point and not talked about often and enough. Another thing I want to talk about, Alex, certainly Darren Clarke, a little bit of a smile on his face. Europe wins the Eurasia Cup. Matter of fact, a resounding victory, 18.5 to 5.5. Was it a fair fight, or what are they just trying to do, grow the game in Asia, I suspect? Well, maybe the intent, trying to grow the confidence of the Europeans for the Ryder Cup, coming up later this year when we go to Hazeltine. So good job there, Mr. Clarke, and we look to see you down the road. All right, Alex, I got a question for you right now. Just how important is a caddy in today's game? I know we touched upon it a little earlier in the show, but I want to give you some time to think about it, and we'll talk about that when we return.
You're listening to The Grow Room, powered by GolfLeague.com, heard on TuneIn Radio and the Armed Forces Radio Network.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
I'd like to welcome some of the most important people in golf to The Grill Room. Golf course superintendents. Golf course superintendents are the unsung heroes of our great game. And because of their efforts, we now have turf that needs less water, a course that is more sustainable, and one that offers natural wildlife habitats. From the days of old Tom Morris, golf course superintendents have given golfers a reason to love this great game. But don't take my word for it. The Golden Bear agrees.
If you love golf like I do, thank a golf course superintendent.
A message from the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and local superintendents everywhere.
The Holiday Inn Resort, Waikiki Beachcombers, you know, as the name suggests, it's not only right in the heart of Waikiki, but it's only 300 short steps to the famous Waikiki Beach. Truly a vacation retreat. It reflects the culture of Honolulu and the spirit of Aloha. 496 comfortable guest rooms, which I'm in one, and I can't tell you how nice it really is. You can see Diamond Head, Waikiki, and of course the ocean, and complimentary Wi-Fi. The Jimmy Buffett restaurant, which is now a farm-to-table restaurant, and farm-to-table to me is great. I mean, I don't think people understand how great it really is. So the Buffett restaurant is great. Everything about the Beachcomber is great. So I would recommend it highly. Anyone coming to Honolulu, the Holiday Inn Resort, Waikiki Beachcomber, it is great. Feel the spirit of Aloha. 877-577-5756. Go online at the Waikiki Beachcomber Resort.com. I mean, obviously, I'm staying there, so you think, oh, well, I'm staying there. It's just a lot of fun, and I will tell you right now that next year, exactly where I'm staying again.
Welcome back to the Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli.
All right, Alex, I'll give you a little time. How important is a caddy in professional golf in 2016? What is their role? It certainly looks like an easy job. I mean, you toss the bag on your shoulder, you keep your eye on the ball, you hand the player the club he wants, you walk off some yardage and pick up a paycheck. I think it's a little more than that.
Well, first of all, every player is different. There's no question that some players just want you to carry the bag. Some players want you to help them read greens. Some players want yardages. Some players want suggestions. And I think it depends upon who the caddy is and who the player is in regards to that merging, that meshing of a relationship. So, Nikki Stricker was on Steve Stricker's bag this week, and she had been on his bag a lot back in the younger days when they basically, I think for financial reasons, probably needed to do that. Her job is not just to carry the bag, as most people might think it would be for a wife or a husband's bag. One of her other jobs is to kind of give him the swift kick in the rear end when he's kind of not doing the things he should be doing. Because Nikki Stricker, not only was her father a coach and coached Steve, but Nikki Stricker played college golf as well. So it's not like she's, a babe in the woods. So she knows, and she knows her husband probably better than any caddy would. So her job is a specific job, even though Steve is spending more time doing yardages than he probably would have been if Jimmy Johnson was on the bag. At the same time, there are players. Let's take Zach Johnson as an example. Zach Johnson relies on Damon Green considerably. Damon Green is not just there to carry the bag. He relies on him a lot. He relies on him with yardages. He relies on him to pull him off of a club or tell him to go ahead and go with the club. You rely on him for many things. So, I think that we should never underestimate the value of a good caddy. There are a lot of caddies out there that don't do as much, but we should never underestimate the value of a good caddy. And I think what you'll find generally is when a player wins, their caddy has a lot to do with that win, even though they don't hit a shot.
Alex, one aspect of caddy, and it's very rarely talked about, but when you break it down, and I was thinking about this the other day, I forget what caused me to think about it, but, a caddy basically is helping somebody else chase their dream. You're not chasing your own dream. Nobody goes out there to try and be the best caddy. They don't give awards for, public awards anyway for the best caddy. Yes, you can make a good living. But, you're helping somebody else chase their dream, and you have to put your dreams, whatever they may be, on the sidelines. And you got to leave your wife, you got to leave your children, you got to go on the road, you got to do all the things that a player does, but you just don't get the glory that players do. And I think, it's completely different than it used to be years ago when, caddies basically were vagabonds. And, they picked up a bag and, they stayed in the cheapest motel. Sometimes there were 8 or 10 of them in one room. But, all of that has changed. And I think the caddy's role has evolved considerably from those days. And, boy, oh, boy, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Depending on the player, they can make a huge difference to whether a player comes out on top or not. All right, another question I have to ask you, Alex. Why is it so tough now to get top-quality fields for the West Coast event? It seems like the tide may be changing a little bit. I know Rory McIlroy is going to be playing in the Northern Trust. Jordan Spieth going to be playing at AT&T and also Northern Trust. So possibly we're seeing a little stronger fields manifesting themselves on the West Coast.
Well, Bob, I think there's a lot of reasons, to be quite honest with you. First up, you want to pick venues that you're comfortable with. So let's just run through it. I mean, if you're in Hyundai, you're in Hyundai. So that's a given. 22 or 23 of the 32 that went to Hyundai played Sony. Sony's a great venue, and I think they had a pretty good field this year. And usually they have to go pretty far down the list. They didn't have to do that this year. The desert is always kind of weird because some people like to play in those kind of pro-am things. Some people don't. The venues are sometimes good, sometimes bad. But then you have, at the same time, you have Abu Dhabi going on this week. And so you got Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy and Ricky Fowler in Abu Dhabi. So that's part of the pull to get some of the better players when they have appearance fees there. The same thing for the next week. You're going to be playing in San Diego, two venues. To be quite honest with you, I don't think the venue is great. The condition of the golf course is never that great. A lot of poana. It's a very long golf course, so if you're not a very long player, you don't really want to play in San Diego. So you take a guy like Kevin Kisner, who's pretty red hot right now. He has no desire to go to San Diego. So I think that's part of the equation. Tiger used to go there all the time, but then all of a sudden he would maybe miss it every once in a while to go to the Middle East. You got Dubai going on, so there's that happening. Or Qatar, I think it is. So that's part of it, the Middle East again, or you're coming back from the Middle East and you don't want to go to San Diego. And then you go to Phoenix, which is an interesting golf course. It's so much longer now than it ever used to be before, so some players don't like it. The weather is sometimes questionable. It's cold in the morning. It can be very difficult to play with the coldness and sometimes the precipitation as well. So you got that going on. AT&T, I think Pebble Beach is great, Bob, but you know you can get some horrendous weather at Pebble Beach. And then again, you're looking at 5.5, 6-hour rounds because of the pro-am, so some people don't want to do that. And then usually a lot of guys will gravitate to Norwood Trust because of Riviera. You'll get, like you said, you got Rory, you got Jordan Spieth going. I'm sure you'll have Ricky going, possibly Jason Day. I would assume Adam Scott. I know Stricker is going. I think Mickelson is skipping it only because he has played so many events on the West Coast. He's starting this week at Career Builders, and he's playing everything else up until Northern Trust. So, you know, that event is usually going to be a pretty solid event. But the bottom line is that between grasses and the Poana and the length and the Middle East and everything else, you're having this pull away from the West Coast. You don't have that same pull away from Florida, because basically Florida is the setup to getting ready for the Masters, and even the European players understand that.
Well, you mentioned the bottom line, Mr. Maselli. Share with us, with our listeners, just the economic impact of hosting the Open Championship at St. Andrews. When I heard these figures, I was astounded.
Well, it's kind of funny because the report that came out was £140 million, the benefit, the impact of Scotland, not just, you know, the St. Andrews area, but Scotland. And that's because of, you know, where you stay. I mean, you can only, so many people can stay in St. Andrews or surrounding areas. So you're in Dundee sometimes, or you're all different places. And then you fly in, you might stay in Edinburgh, whatever it may be. Those numbers are not inconsistent with the numbers that were just released a couple weeks ago by the USGA in Pierce County for Chambers Bay that hosted the U.S. Open last year, and they were at $140 million. So it's big, but I think what people have to understand, and I'm not going to be able to comment so much about St. Andrews because I think St. Andrews, the area of St. Andrews, did pretty well, but let's take a couple years ago when we were at Muirfield. There's a little town outside of Muirfield where Muirfield is called Gullen. And we stayed very close to Muirfield that year. And we would just walk down to the little town of Gullen and have dinner. The little town of Gullen was less busy that week of the Open Championship than it normally is on a weekly basis. And the reason was is because the way the RNA had set it up, all the traffic was diverted away from Gullen. And it was diverted towards North Berwick or back up towards Edinburgh. So the people in Gullen never got the benefit of having the Open Championship, you know, not more than a drive or 7-iron away from their facilities. When I called Oakmont, the Bureau of Oakmont, last week, and I actually wrote a story about this, the little town of Oakmont, which is maybe a 2-mile strip of shops and restaurants, they have the same problem. All the buses push everybody out from the golf course out to where their parking is somewhere, and these people never get to the little town of Oakmont, and they never benefit again from having the U.S. Open you know, not too far away from where these shops and restaurants are. So, you know, the area itself, the larger area might benefit, but the smaller area that usually deals with most of the impact of having those opens there, a lot of times benefit very little.
Yeah, and of course, 28% of the visitors to the area for the Open Championship at St. Andrews, they believe they came from the United States, and why wouldn't you? If you've never been to St. Andrews, you're listening to me right now, please go. It's one of those special events. Speaking of special events, Alex, my brother Tom and his wife June, they're huge fans of Celine Dion, and they went to Las Vegas, and they saw her performance the other night. Ironically enough, it's the last one for quite a while, with her husband, Renee, passing away, who, by the way, a very avid golfer, played a lot of golf at Donald Trump's place in West Palm Beach, played against Jesper Parnevik on a regular basis, and supposedly the wager was $100 a hole. And you say, wow, that's a lot of money, but probably that's a pretty cheap playing lesson if you get to play against Jesper Parnevik. And Jesper always gave Renee enough shots to make it competitive. Celine herself, an avid golfer, brags that she has a 17 handicap. And unfortunately, 2 days after losing her husband, lost her brother to a battle of cancer. Our condolences. She actually jumped in. I believe it was at the Dinah Shore or Nabisco or whatever they called it back in 2000. Carrie Webb had her jump into that Poppy's Pond after Carrie Webb won. So as we go to break, we want to thank our two Hawaiian hotel partners for such great hospitality the last 2 weeks. The Kapalua Villas on Maui, an Outrigger hotel property, and the Holiday Inn Resort Waikiki Beachcomber. They are both fantastic properties. So if you're going to spend some time in the Hawaiian Islands on either Maui or Oahu, please put these properties on your list to consider. You will not regret it. You can find them on the web, kapaluavillasmaui.com or the Waikiki Beachcomber Resort.com.
You're listening to The Grow Room, powered by GolfLeague.com, heard on TuneIn Radio and on the Armed Forces Radio Network.
The Grill Room.
Alex, right now I'd like to mention our newest hotel partner, the Kapalua Villas Maui, the ultimate hideaway where privacy is as much a part of the experience as the world-class facilities. 3 beaches, 11 restaurants, a great spa, championship golf, and world-class tennis. If a trip to Maui is in your plans, visit KapaluaVillasMaui.com or call them at 800-545-0018 to make your reservation today. Kapalua Villas Maui, the complete Hawaii experience.
Hi, I'm Ernie Els. Autism is not game over, it is game on. Get educated and learn the facts. Please learn the early warning signs on our website, elsforautism.com, and talk to your doctor about an autism screening if you have any concerns.
Sight is one of our most valued senses. Many cherished memories and important life lessons are acquired through sight. Through the Transitions Healthy Sight for Life Fund, we're reaching out in communities around the world to help people understand and protect their healthy sight. Think about what you'd miss seeing if you lost your eyesight tomorrow, and take steps to protect your vision today. See more at HealthySightForLife.org.
Welcome back to The Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli.
All right, Alex, let's tidy up things a little bit. Some news items to catch up on. Bell will be awarded the Bob Jones Award by the USGA. Judy, a good friend to both of us, and an honor well-deserved.
Yes. I think that when she became president, she changed a lot of things at the USGA. And I think the one thing I remember the most is when they went to Pine Needles, wasn't her decision, but she was president at the time, when they went to Pine Needles and Annika Sorenstam won, Judy Bell got up there and thanked the Pine Needles Resort and thanked Annika Sorenstam and thanked Peggy Kirkbell, and then said that we're bringing the Women's Open back here, and I believe she almost said the date, and everybody that was on the board of the USGA was looking at each other because that was something that required more than just Judy Bell telling it or proclaiming it. And they did go back, and it was another successful Open Women's Open. So congratulations to Judy Bell.
What about Jim Richardson? He's Herb Kohler's right in, man. He's announced his intention to run for Secretary of the PGA of America. He's even going modern on us with his Jim for PGA Secretary.com website. Jim Richardson, you know, you say big deal running for Secretary of the PGA of America, but that is the pipeline to get to be president of the PGA of America. Am I right?
Well, that's the only way. You become secretary, you hold that position, then you become vice president, and then you become president. And that's how it's worked since the beginning. And what's interesting is that if you go to the PGA of America, whatever the meeting is, their annual meeting, it's a true election. They all get up, they all have buttons, they all have different groups that they have with them. They go up and they give their speeches, and then they have voting, and it's electronic. And I was there the last time round, and when Susie Whaley became secretary, and it was pretty interesting. Unfortunately, I was told, because it was the first time I'd been to one, that I was told it gets kind of crazy. You know, the voting, usually you have go 3, 4, 5 ballots. Well, Susie Whaley won on the first ballot, so I was a little disappointed by that. But Jim Richardson has a certain a lot of positiveness behind him with Herb Kohler being the right-hand man.
Let me just say this. If your attendance doesn't make an event crazy, there's nobody in captivity that can make an event crazy. Sherwood Country Club, former home of the Tigers event, the Hero World Challenge, undergoing about almost $11 million in restoration, and now it's going to be home to one of the Champion Tour playoff events, the 2016 PowerShares QQQ Championship.
Not a surprise at all, and I think that you're starting to see the Champions Tour really kind of, I don't know what you want to say, but they're really establishing themselves, I think, as a bigger tour than they were. They may not have as many events, but the events are solid events on solid venues. And I think as the guys come off the PGA Tour and get to this tour, they're going to find that they're playing some really good venues.
Pretty nice prize for the young man that won the Latin American Amateur Championship. He's from Costa Rica. He's 16 years old, Paul Chaplet. And guess what? Winning that event, I get you an invite to the Masters. Getting an invite to the Masters is just the opposite of what's happening to Greg Norman. He's been invited out as lead analyst for Fox Sports golf coverage. I'm hearing a good possibility that Paul Azinger may be taking over that spot. I know you're good friends with Paul. Have you heard anything, Alex?
Well, I talked to Paul last night, and he has not been approached about the job. He does not have an offer from Fox, and he still has a contract to provide golf coverage for ESPN, which really all they have left now is the Masters. So that's where it stands at this point. I think the whole Norman thing probably got a little out faster than Fox had wanted it to, but it's out now, and it's clear they made a release this morning with comments from both Fox and from Greg Norman that he was no longer going to be participating in the coverage. So now it's up to Mark Loomis, the producer of Fox's golf coverage, to decide what to do. And I would say, Bob, that you know, everybody gravitates to Paul Azinger as a name, and I don't have a problem with that. I think that's a legitimate suggestion. There are other people out there. Do I think anybody's better than Paul would be? Probably not, but that doesn't mean it's going to be Paul. So we'll see what happens. I think there'll probably be, to be quite honest with you, I think there'll probably be some other changes to the golf coverage as well. I think Mark Loomis is a pretty smart guy, and I think you may find him wanting to do some other changes as well.
Well, I'm casting my vote for the lead analyst for Fox's sports golf coverage. I hope that gentleman's wearing a bow tie. All right, I'm going to turn this one over to you, Alex. You have the your hand on the pulse better than anybody as far as Wall Street and athletes raising funds, hearing the name Fantex. What's this all about?
You know, Bob, I really have a hard time with this as well. You know, Scott Langley, who actually, I think we probably learned a little bit most about Scott Langley when it was at Sony when he had a chance to win a couple years ago. He inked an upfront deal of $3.06 million, where this group Fantex will basically sell shares into Langley. In exchange for that, he'll get 15% of the earnings. It's almost like a stock market for athletes. And I know Scott is not the only one that has this. I think J.J. Henry has a Fantex bag as well. It's just a different way of doing things. I don't know if I would be investing in a player unless his name was Tiger Woods. I think that would have been a guaranteed yes. There's a few other players that would have been that much of a lock. No offense to Scott Langley, but he does not seem like the lock that I would be investing in.
Well, I might put up some funds if they ask me if I want to jump on the Jordan Spieth bag. That's for sure.
Well, Bob, that's it for this week. You've been listening to The Grill Room, heard on TuneIn Radio and the Armed Forces Radio Network, powered by GolfWeek.com. By the way, The Grill Room is also available on iTunes, SoundCloud, Audioboom, and, of course, on our website, thegrillroom.com. If you have a minute, please let us know how you like our new 2016 revamped show format. We'd love to hear your feedback. You can email us at themenu@thegrillroom.com.
A big thank you to our partners, the Holiday Inn Resort Waikiki Beachcomber, to the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America, the gentlemen that keep our golf courses in the meticulous condition they are so that we can enjoy our weekly rounds of golf, and also to GolfWeek.com. So for Janice Self, our executive producer, Alex Maselli, and myself, Bob Bupka, a big thank you for being part of our Grill Room family. Please follow us on Twitter at TGRGolf and like us on Facebook at The Grill Room Golf Show.
Thanks for spending some time in The Grill Room. No need to leave a tip. Just come back again next week. The Grill Room.